The childcare dilemma and working from home. Life has completely changed in so many ways as communities, the state, the nation, and the world respond to the coronavirus pandemic. This week on Maine Calling, we will focus on critical concerns to Maine people right now, to seek answers from experts and from each other. Each Maine Calling show will be 2 hours instead of one. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the first hour, we will examine the childcare dilemma. With so many schools closed, many parents who have to work are scrambling for childcare. But public health experts don't want more kids gathering together. And childcare providers worry about surviving economically. In the second hour, we'll discuss working from home. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. All this week, we are doing two-hour shows so that we can address some of the pressing issues that Mainers are facing during the coronavirus crisis. For the first hour today, we are talking about childcare and all of the challenges that families, childcare providers, and workers have been dealing with throughout Maine. A little later, we will talk about working from home. Joining me for this first hour to discuss childcare in the age of coronavirus, Tara Williams, who is Executive Director of the Maine Association for the Education of Young Children, and Todd Landry, who is Director of the Office of Child and Family Services with Maine's Department of Health and Human Services. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you wondered whether or not to leave your child in a child care center? Are you trying to either close your center or keep it open? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Tara, we're hearing stories from all over the country that one of the biggest dilemmas that's happening as part of the coronavirus crisis is child care. Can you describe the situation for child care providers in Maine?
Sure. I'll try to kind of sum it up. Jennifer, thank you for having me on. There's a lot of stress right now and confusion that we've seen among our childcare professionals in Maine. They're small businesses, and they're really navigating this tough decision about whether or not to stay open. And many are struggling whether or not they're opened or closed, about having a real loss of income and loss of funds.
How many child cares are you hearing from that are closing? How many are trying to expand to take in people whose kids aren't going to school?
You know, we don't have exact numbers, and I know the Office of Child and Family Services and Licensing is collecting some data and information on that. We are as well. From those that we've heard that about 40% of those at least who've reached out to us have closed temporarily, but maybe reopening soon. And we're definitely hearing very different ways that they're trying to handle the closing if they have closed. So whether or not they're partially charging parents or not charging at all, asking parents who can to pay, but then, you know, offering scholarships or the ability to not pay if parents just can't.
Todd, Massachusetts just ordered child care centers to close, except when they're caring for children of emergency workers and healthcare providers. Is this likely to happen in Maine?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And I want to add or start off by saying my thanks to all of the child care providers in the state who continue to provide and support our working families, including families with children, those parents who are first responders or who are working essential services like healthcare and other services that our communities depend upon. In relation to your question, we don't know exactly where things are going to go in Maine. Every state is different. Massachusetts, California, and other states are making decisions based on their unique situations and circumstances. What we're focused on right now is what is happening here in Maine and the best way to support Maine children and families.
Okay, so what's being done to help? What are you doing for child care providers?
Well, we have tried to respond in a number of different ways. And first of all, I do want to say that quality child care and having quality child care available is absolutely essential to Maine's working families. And that now is probably more true than ever. It's absolutely vital. Working families need child care, as I said, including those parents who work in essential services like health care, first responders, child protection investigators, and others. But there's also those that work in other systems and in other services that we depend upon in the state of Maine, such as grocery stores, pharmacies, and other services that are absolutely critical to our communities, particularly in today's environment. So our position has been and remains that we encourage child care providers to stay open so that those who cannot work from home have child care that's available. We think that's absolutely critical in order to continue to provide those essential services in our state. So what have we done? There's a number of pieces that we've taken action on. I'm happy to say that as soon as the governor last a week ago Sunday declared a civil state of emergency, we immediately implemented our child care emergency plan. And among the things that that did was it waived a 12-day notice required of parents who need to change providers in this situation. It extended all of our current child care subsidy awards that are due for renewal, allowing additional time for those families. We're continuing to pay our subsidy providers for the children who are not attending right now. We're paying those as excused absences during this time period in order to help sustain our providers during this time period. We've also increased parents' awards based on some cases they need more hours, such as our health care parents and others. And we're bringing new families on the child care subsidy on an emergency basis and ensuring that they get the services that they need. Last thing I'll mention is we did include in our plans the ability to issue emergency temporary child care licenses. To date, and this information is on our website, we have issued 4 emergency licenses statewide. 3 of those were for facilities related to the Department of Corrections. 1 of them was for a family child care provider in the southern part of our state. I do also will say that we have additional guidance coming out later today for child and staff screening protocols, as well as additional information for our child care providers. All of this information is available on our website. And you can get to that website if you go to your search bar and type in Maine, M-A-I-N-E, the state, OCFS, Maine OCFS. It'll bring up or bring you to the link for our page. And we do have a special COVID-19 page where all of this information is on the page. It's also accessible via the Maine Department of Health and Human Services page. And we went ahead and put everything out there that we've been providing to our providers and others. We have been providing information to our child care providers since March the 2nd when we were in the preparation and planning for what might come our way. And then since then, we've continued to update that, including 5 or 6 postings just last week related specifically to child care. So while we have done a significant amount of work, we recognize there's still a lot to do. We want to make sure that these essential vital services are available so that many of the many of our neighbors who we are relying on right now for health care to respond to us in times of emergency, or even our staff who are working in essential services, like I said, grocery stores, pharmacies, and other services, are available to continue to provide for Mainers across the state.
Todd, thank you. And I want to turn to Corrections Commissioner Randall Liberty. You mentioned Todd Landry. Commissioner Liberty just mentioned that emergency licenses have been granted, including 3 for the Department of Corrections. What is the Department of Corrections doing right now that's different than usual in terms of child care? Randy Liberty, are you there?
Yes, do you hear me?
Yes, I do. Go ahead. Randy, can you hear me? Shoot. Well, sorry to hear about that. Hopefully, Commissioner Liberty can get back to us on another line and we can talk about that further. I want to go back, Todd, to you and to you as well, Tara, and talk about, you know, Maine was already in the midst of what many believed was a child care crisis. Maine Public Radio reporters focused us on this last year. It's already very difficult to find child care in this state. Child care workers have a hard time making a living on what they're paid. How does this, Tara, exacerbate this existing problem?
Well, one of the things we know is that a lot of child care programs operate on pretty thin margins. And so a crisis like this definitely makes things a lot harder and urgent for a lot of these small businesses. So, for example, we conducted a survey recently and asked them about, you know, how long would you be able to sustain a closure? And it's not one particular answer, but some are thinking without any parent fees coming in or emergency support, I could handle 2 weeks, maybe three. Some are saying a month, but not very long. And so they're really feeling that right now as they grapple with what to do at a time when even some who are staying home and don't have a lot of children because many families are choosing and able to keep their children home.
And Todd Landry, is there any talk about finding a way to have some sort of emergency pay, hazard pay, really, for childcare workers who are risking exposure themselves by taking care of children?
As it relates to that, and I appreciate that question significantly, and before I answer that question, I also want to address a question that you posed to Tara before. Tara mentioned about the number of child care providers who may have closed across the state. I know she did a sampling. We have been collecting that information on a statewide basis since last week when some of the closures began to occur. As of Friday, statewide, about 26% of the, or about a quarter of the child care providers that are licensed in the state have closed. Three-fourths of them as of Friday were remaining open. So there are still a significant number that have remained open. We appreciate that. We also understand that, you know, for the quarter that have closed, that is a personal decision that is made by them as private businesses and based on the unique situations that they have. And our focus is really how do we support both of those types of centers and their employees during this time period. I laid out a number of things that we're doing in order to assist them, including financial support for those children on subsidy who were in their centers, whether they're attending or not. We're continuing to pay for those for that provision of service as one way that we're helping those providers. There could be additional federal resources coming our way. There are some potential legislative actions happening in Congress right now that could certainly make it provide additional resources that we may be able to help those providers as well as the staff that are in their operations.
Okay, well, we're going to try to go to Commissioner Randy Liberty from the Department of Corrections again. Commissioner Liberty, are you there?
Good afternoon. I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. So I understand that the Department of Corrections has made some changes. I assume this is so that your guards and other personnel, their children will be taken care of during this crisis.
Yes, that's correct. As the child care providers continue to close, we need that vital service for our staff. As you know, we have mandatory staffing levels that we need to maintain safety and security at the correctional facilities. And many of our employees both work, and it puts them in a very difficult position to one of them has to stay home. So if we can provide that child care service, that goes a long ways in the maintaining safety and security of our facilities.
Are you doing that right on site?
We have some state-owned buildings. A couple are off-site. One is on-site, and we're using existing resources to staff that. Today we have five that are in care, so it's a small number. But for those young families that have children and need that service, it's critical for them to be able to continue to work and be employed and bring home a paycheck and feel secure that their children are safe.
Sure, it seems as though some of the biggest challenges confronting the state, both child care and the need for more corrections officers, both compounded by this situation.
Yes, that's correct. As you know, going into this state and national emergency. The correctional industry is at a, you know, critical staffing both at the county, state, and national level. So that brings some challenges for us. So we appreciate the folks, Dr. Landry and Officer of Child and Family Services, to expedite this process and allow us to watch these children that are very important to us.
Well, Commissioner Randy Liberty, thanks so much for calling in. He is head of Maine's Department of Corrections. I know that you, Todd Landry, can't stay with us much longer, so I wanted to get an email to you. This is from April. How can you guarantee safety for children and staff when you are supporting the waiver of the background check and ratios? Children who may have had behaviors or needs will not have the ability to thrive in this situation and may injure themselves or others. And that's from April in Portland. Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly I appreciate the concern that she's expressing. One of the things that we have done in order to accommodate the need for situations like we have talked about is to temporarily waive background checks for new employees, but only in situations where those employees are going to be constantly supervised. So those employees that are going to be in that situation that a provider may need to bring on in order to provide for children, those staff that don't have that background check have to be supervised on a constant basis, so they're not to be left alone with any children. So that's an example of how we believe we have balanced the need for our child care providers to potentially bring on some additional staff at this time period, or to replace staff who are unable to work while still ensuring the safety of the children in their care. We've done a similar thing for the number of children that a child care provider could have, only for school-age children, so pre-K and above age children. For infants, for toddlers, for the preschool children, those ratios stay exactly the same. Those have not changed. But for school-age children, specifically pre-K, kindergarten, and up age children, we have, on a case-by-case basis, we will consider waiving or changing the maximum number of children that a facility can have, but it's based on the ability of that facility to be able to provide for those children, to be able to staff, to care for those children. And so those are on a case-by-case basis, not a uniform across-the-table rule change.
Well, Todd, thank you so much for joining us. We are going to take a quick break, and we're going to let Todd Landry go. You have a lot on your plate right now. I appreciate the time you were able to spend with us. Todd Landry, Director of the Child and Family Services, the Office of Child and Family Services within DHHS. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us, Todd. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Marshall Communications with Nancy Marshall's The PR Maven podcast, offering advice on building your brand and network, marshallpr.com, and Maine Community Foundation, proud to support Maine Calling, a forum for ideas and issues that matter most, mainecf.org.
As the Affordable Care Act turns 10, available health care is more relevant for patients than ever.
I felt more in charge of my cancer than I ever felt about the insurance situation.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. How did the Affordable Care Act change health care 10 years ago, and how's the coronavirus changing health care today? That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. With coronavirus social distancing practices now in place all around our state, you may find that you have young ones around the house more than usual. Might we suggest a couple of valued educational resources that will make the time worthwhile? Maine Public's PBS Kids 24/7 television channel is a wonderful learning environment with trusted educational, non-commercial programming for those younger folks. And PBS Learning Media is a free online educational K-12 learning resource with material and lessons for children and young adults of all ages. You'll find PBS Learning Media at mainepublic.org. Please click on the Education drop-down. Enjoy!
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, in this first half of our two-hour program, we are addressing the child care challenges that have arisen during the coronavirus crisis. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Calling in now is Tracy Fortin. She is Director of Child and Family Services for Kennebec Valley Community Action Program, where she is both Head Start Director and EduCare Central Maine Executive Director. Thanks for joining us, Tracy.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer.
What's happening in your area? What's happening in your organization? Are the centers open? Are you doing things differently? And are you seeing more children?
Well, in our area in Central Maine, we follow public schools. We partner with many public schools, so we pretty much follow their calendar. So our preschools also closed, which is can be very difficult, as we know, for families. Our child care center in EduCare, we serve over 200 children and families. Some of those are our public school partnerships. We did poll families, and at the onset of this crisis, families were really feeling they wanted to either be home with their children, to use family, friend, or neighbor caregivers initially, and were also concerned about having their children in a large facility given the direction to have small groups. For Head Start across the state, there are 11 Head Start grantees, and all are really following that same direction, with the exception that Washington Hancock County still is operating two classrooms for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers for their rural catchment area. Most recently, I've been having some conversation with Maine General Hospital, and we at EduCare are preparing for potentially offering child care services, reopening and offering child care services for essential personnel.
So, Tracy, have you heard from families that are having a hard time, because you're closed, finding care for their children?
Yeah, many families are not working because their employment is no longer available. The majority of our families are low income, and they are working one or two, many part-time jobs. Part-time staff are not going into work. So financially, it is a hardship for them, but many do not have employment. Or those who are also attending school, you know, higher education, those schools have also closed.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Tracy Fortin, who directs Child and Family Services for the Kennebec Valley Community Action Program. We're going to go to now Megan Hamblett, Executive Director of the YMCA Alliances of Maine, as well as New Hampshire and Vermont. Thanks for calling in, Megan. Megan, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, terrific. Now, Megan, I have a letter in front of me that you were one of your organization and others signed calling for some changes. And one of those is that you would like to see the closure of child care programs with some remaining open in special situations. What would you like to see happen in Maine?
Well, what we're finding across the state, we have 16 YMCAs in the state of Maine, where all Ys have closed, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, as far as their regular facilities go. And immediately, some did stay open for their childcare and their after-school program needs. Similar to what other organizations are finding is that many of those families found themselves out of work and they didn't necessarily need the care. But what we've been called upon is to work with our local healthcare organizations and many of the communities that we serve to provide the essential care. So that's what's happening now, is that several of our wives have stepped up to take care of hospital employees, children, EMS, first responders, even local grocery stores, places that have to stay open but have childcare needs.
So how are they taking care of them? Is it in the YMCA or is there a separate facility?
It depends per community, really. In some cases, it is on-site at the hospital. In other cases, it is at the YMCA. And they have expanded because their Y facilities are closed. And DHS licensing has has unrestricted some of the restrictions around specific licensing. Our Ys are able to take on those children in their own facilities.
All right. Are you able to find enough workers to staff this?
We are. Unfortunately, many of our wives have had to lay off or furlough their employees, many of whom are that may not have worked in particularly in the child care programs, but have the credentials to be able to do that. So we're actually able to keep some of our employees on rather than unemploying them.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Megan Hamblett, and she is with the She's executive director of YMCA Alliances in Maine. Thanks so much, Megan. Tara, as you listen to all of these call-ins, I'm wondering if you feel as though who we've talked to so far are the lucky ones, the larger organizations that have a few more options than maybe home child care centers.
Well, yeah, there definitely are some child care programs in our state that are able to be attached to a college or a business or another type of organization that's been able to provide a little bit of support at this time. But the majority of our child care programs in this state are small facilities, small businesses, and may not have a type of network or connection to turn to right now. So that can both be difficult financially, but also in just trying to figure out best practices and make decisions.
All right. And I'm wondering, too, we heard from the Department of Corrections and Commissioner Liberty about their ability to step forward and open these temporary centers. Are we hearing anything like that from any other employers in Maine, especially employers who have to remain open?
We haven't heard of that yet at this time. You know, we heard from Maine Health that they are working really hard to get childcare for their employees. But the way that they've been looking at it is trying to find folks who can provide childcare in the homes of the doctors and other healthcare workers rather than sending children to larger childcare centers or facilities. And I think that's, you know, one of the questions we've been hearing a lot from many of our members and childcare programs who've been calling and emailing us is really just looking for some more guidelines. So I was pleased to hear that Director Landry said those are coming out, because folks who are staying open are really wondering, what are the specific things I should be doing when I'm hearing about social distancing and the importance of keeping small groups? What does that look like in childcare? Because that could be really difficult.
All right. So we're going to go right back to Tracy for just a moment, Tracy Fortin. And Tracy, I'm sorry I let you go before I let you talk about Head Start and what Head Start is doing.
Well, the 11 grantees in Head Start serve over 4,000 children in the state of Maine. And the Office of Head Start, the federal office, has been flexible and has agreed and provided direction that we can pay our staff through April, which is fabulous. Many of our staff are working from home, but each staff person in all of our programs has a family that they are assigned to, or several families, and if not daily, at least weekly, are reaching out to the families to offer support, to talk to them about what their needs are, to provide distance learning for the young children. We are connecting with the area food supports, many through public schools, to help with food provision and delivery of diapers, making connections with WIC, and could do some deliveries as well. Many of the families who are low income already have some elements of crisis in their lives. So providing those critical components of family services, and the health and nutrition supports over the phone and the education supports makes a very large difference.
All right. Well, Tracy, thank you again. We're going to go to Charlotte. Charlotte, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Charlotte. Go ahead.
Thank you for including me.
Go ahead.
Hi. So I work for a nonprofit child care center here in Portland, and obviously we are the county with the largest number We are currently closed, but we are trying to think literally outside the box and figure out a way to be open and at least give children of families who absolutely have to work an availability to have childcare, quality childcare, with their regular teachers, not some staff that we're bringing in, but their regular teachers. But a couple of points I want to talk about really quickly is, first of all, the food component is huge. I would say that 90% of our kids depend on their breakfast, lunch, and afternoon snack through our program. Their parents are working or going to school. Clearly, if they're going to school, that's not happening right now, so they can be home. But the biggest thing I want to talk about is working from home, because that's this great thing that we all say, hey, we live in a time where we can open up our laptops, and assuming you have internet and it's all working. But the problem is they can't work from home and educate the kids from home. I mean, there's only so many hours in the day.
Sure. And, you know, Charlotte, the second half of this program is going to be about working from home, ironically. But Tara, let me put that to you about the whole idea that, you know, kids aren't just missing out on care, but missing out on education right now.
I have 4-year-olds that are Skyping each other for play dates, which is horrible.
Sure, Charlotte. I want to turn to Tara on this. Go ahead, Tara.
No problem. Yes, I was just thinking about that. You know, it's one thing that comes to my mind a lot in these times that we're in right now, because we have two different systems, and we refer to childcare as childcare and think about a lot the caregiving, nurturing aspect of it. But just like our public schools, it is a place of learning, and early learning is so important for children. So it's, you know, wonderful to hear about all the ways that many of our early educators are connecting. Tracy Fortin, who had called in, gave an example of the Head Start teachers who've been sending resources home and connecting with parents. And I've heard from several other small, like, privately owned childcare programs that they're doing the same thing.
All right. Well, Charlotte, thank you for your call. We're going to move on because so many people are calling in here. We're going to go now to Sasha. Sasha Shunk is a board member of the Family Child Care Association of Maine and owns her own child care in Portland. Thanks for calling in, Sasha.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me. So did you have a question for me first? Or
I just wanted to ask what's happening at your child care center.
So at my child care, so I'm located in Portland. I did opt to close once I got the announcement that the Portland Public Schools closed. It was definitely a very hard decision. But fortunately, all of my parents have been extremely supportive of that. My own child is immunocompromised.
Yeah.
I've had to say that so many times, but he is. And so that really just puts a whole other level of thinking this is my house and having all the potential for germs coming into the house, and the spread is definitely very scary, and especially in Cumberland County, where there has been community transmission on that. So my own staff was able to, they have a file for unemployment. One thing that's very crucial for people to understand that as a small business owner, as a family child care provider, I'm a sole proprietor, and so I am not eligible for unemployment. Neither are the other 900-plus family child care providers in our state. So I am very fortunate that my own families are able to continue to pay me at least a portion of their weekly fee, because that ensures that I'm still being able to collect a paycheck as well.
Sasha,
is not the case for most people.
Sasha, you're bringing up such an important point. And Tara, is there a request into the state to change this or to the federal government so that home daycare providers will qualify for unemployment benefits?
Yes, we did a joint letter with the Family Child Care Association of Maine and others, both to our state leaders and our congressional delegation. And one of the things we emphasized is that unemployment
is so important right now for our child care programs, and we need provisions to be made in some of these emergency stimulus package and other bills that are being looked at to make sure that small business, a person who's self-employed, could get unemployment.
All right. Well, Sasha, thank you so much for calling in. That was Sasha Shunk, who is a board member of the Family Child Care Association and owns her own child care in Portland. Good luck to you and to your child who is immunocompromised. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments about child care during coronavirus. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater in Portland, offering April vacation camp and summer day camp programs. Register at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
James Finney Baxter was born in Gorham on March 23, 1831. He was a businessman, historian, civic leader, and benefactor of Portland and Gorham. He eventually served as mayor of Portland for six terms between 1893 and 1905. Baxter, who began the Baxter Canning Company, was a founder of the Portland Society of Art, the Portland Public Library, and served as president of the Maine Historical Society from 1890 to 1921. One of his sons, Percival Baxter, became governor of Maine in 1921.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries and Maine Maritime Museum. Happy birthday, Maine!
Perhaps you listen to All Things Considered on your way home or while preparing the evening meal. Might we suggest after you settle in a bit later that you watch the PBS NewsHour on Maine Public Television to sift through the day's important stories and developments. Available at both 6 and 7 weekday evenings, the program is known for its thoroughness, fairness, and impartiality, and it's commercial-free, as you'd expect from public media. A news source you can trust, the PBS NewsHour at 6 and 7 each evening on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, in this first hour of our two-hour program, we are talking about the challenges of finding and providing child care while our state responds to the coronavirus. Next hour, we will discuss working from home. Join our conversation 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to Matt, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Oh, good. I'm at home, and I work at a nursery school in Portland, and I'm just missing the children I work with, and I'm missing the families as well, and kind of wondering if there will be a center to go to once this is over. But I was
Sure.
thinking a lot about what it will look like when we go back. I mean, we may have to start taking the temperature of everyone who comes into the building. Can we meet the children on the sidewalk so that the parents won't be coming in and out of the building? And what's the liability around that? Who will, you know, will we need masks? Who will supply them? Also, I work with infants, children between 6 weeks and about a year, and I can't really be practicing social distancing while I'm changing a diaper or giving someone a bottle or supplying them with the kind of cuddles and things that is part of my job, you know. It's very worrying.
Matt, thank you so much for calling in. Tara yeah. Williams, what is your response to Matt? What do you think happens next?
Well, that is, you know, these are the questions that I think a lot of us around the state in this child care field and advocacy have been asking the last couple of weeks, because the main questions we're hearing are, I need more information about what to do. What are the guidelines to be able to even operate a child care right now, and how to do it safely for children and families? So we're really looking forward to hearing more from the state about that. But then the other piece about, you know, I heard, you know, when you just called in, Matt, saying, will I have somewhere to go back to? And that's what we're also hearing from folks. Can I share just a quick message I got from a child care center just this morning?
Sure.
A woman wrote in, Betsy from Hancock County, and said she has 82 children enrolled and 23 employees. She's offering emergency care and trying to stay open, but only two children who need it. She's using her personal savings to pay her staff for the next 2 weeks, and then she's worried she'll be out of business. That's what we're talking about right now, what our child care programs are going through.
Well, Matt, thank you for calling in, and good luck to you and to your child care center as you figure out what to do in the coming weeks. We're going to go to Jen, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling from an organization called Maine Roads to Quality. We're the professional development network for the state supporting early childhood practitioners. And I just wanted to share that we're all working from home, but we're still available to help and support practitioners with online training and online virtual on-site consultation. And also we have a warm line. And I can share the number if people are interested.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay, so you can call our warm line, which is preventative non-emergency person-to-person support. So you can call. It's 1-844-209-5964. And the email, you can also email, and it's mrtq.warmline@maine.edu. And we have someone who monitors those calls and returns them usually within one business day for people.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in, Jen. And we'll also put those resources on our Maine Calling website as well, as we do with every program. So thank you, Jen. We're going to turn now to Rita Furlow, who is Senior Policy Analyst with the Maine Children's Alliance. Thanks for calling in, Rita.
Thanks for having me.
You know, Maine's child care system already had issues before coronavirus hit. Where is the system vulnerable already, and where are we seeing things go from cracks to crevices during this?
Well, you're correct. I mean, there were, the field has not been in good shape for a number of years because of a lack of both state and federal investment. And it's really operated on the backs of parents. I mean, parents really, for the most part, are paying the vast majority of child care, for child care. The federal government puts in around something like $17 million. But the state of Maine actually puts in very little state dollars or general fund dollars to support child care. So we've already been concerned, and this is really has many of us alarmed that that people who are going to get laid off, businesses who aren't going to be able to pay their bills, that they may decide to do something else when this crisis is over, that they may decide that just to support their own family, they can't continue to work for organizations that have so little infrastructure and support for them. So many providers have very little ability to offer, paid leave, sick leave, health benefits. So our major concern is that people may find something else to do in terms of a career, and that a number of these child care centers may decide not to reopen.
Rita, what do you think would be a solution or a change that would make a significant difference for the child care dilemma here?
I think we have to find a funding stream to support early childhood the way we support public schools, right? I mean, many of us have been thinking and comparing what has happened during this crisis to in terms of the early childhood field and those teachers versus the support that teachers in public school have, right? They're not being laid off. They still have sick benefits and paid leave, and they are just in such a better financial position to be able to continue in this field and continue to serve their students. And so I think we need to find a funding stream to support the early childhood profession in a similar way.
Well, Rita, thank you so much for calling in. That's Rita Furlow. She's with the Maine Children's Alliance. And Tara, I was wondering if you had anything to add to what Rita has been saying.
Just
I can't agree more with how important that is. We need this to be a stable system for families in Maine. We need it to be able to exist and be strong well after we're done with this coronavirus situation. So I think, you know, our government at the state and federal level really needs to look at some ways that we can invest, treat this first 5 years of children's lives in the same way we do the school and the education they get after, that it would really become a public good. And that would help when we get into situations like this to not have it be such a crisis.
We'll go to Kristen, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Kristen, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Yes, Rita. She sort of encapsulated everything that is good about early childhood, and I'm hoping that the good that comes out of this is a wake-up call that, you know, early childhood is a very noble profession, and it needs to be treated as such. But given that, for the centers that have chosen to close, again, out of just, you know, it's a hardship for everyone, the owners, the employees who don't know if they're going to have a job to go back to. I'm wondering if any of your guests can speak to, it seems to be a glaring discrepancy that there's an optional closure for centers, for all centers, given that children, as one of the earlier teachers called in and said, children are the most efficient pollinators of the coronavirus. They can be asymptomatic or not have any symptoms. And I'm wondering what the state is doing to monitor the centers that are staying open and giving them guidance as far as what the protocols are in place as the children come and go from the center each day. Their parents, who are presumably still working and coming and going out into the community, it's really kind of a sharp stick in the eye to the centers that chose to close and for whom it's a hardship, and then to have other centers being lauded for staying open, and yet it seems to fly in the face of everything the medical community is telling us about social distancing and all that sort of thing. So,
sure, Kristen, I think you've put your finger on the very center of the dilemma here. And Tara, I know you're not with the state, do you know what's being done to monitor whether or not coronavirus is being spread through the child care centers that have remained open to support people who have to work?
I am not able to give specifics on that. I do know that there was some new guidelines that came out just for Bangor from their city this weekend because they put out some emergency guidelines for a lot of the small businesses. And with childcare there, they said starting this week in Bangor, childcare has to be carried out in stable groups of 10 or fewer children, meaning that if you have more than one group of children in a center, children can't change from one group to another or be, you know, in contact with other groups. And that the teacher or early educator has to also be consistent with the same group of children and not mix. So I'm curious to see, you know, we may see some guidelines similar to this coming out at more of a state level as we look at how to really help our childcare programs protect the health and safety of children.
Kristen, thanks so much for your call. Tara, I know we just have a few minutes left with you, and I wanted to ask you about children staying at home. I suspect for, you know, maybe not toddlers, but for children who are a little bit older, there are a lot of parents thinking, well, I wouldn't usually leave my, say, 9 or 10-year-old home by his or herself, but I don't have an option now. What is your expert guidelines to, what is your thinking about when a child is old enough to spend some time at home alone if they don't usually do so?
I would recommend with our youngest children in early childhood, we're talking about birth to age 8, that they are not left home alone, but that you, and I know you're going to go into your next hour about working from home, that parents and others are finding ways to give them ways to be active and play and do things during the day while they're attempting to telework or manage all that our families are trying to manage right now. I know it's a really hard time, and some families are struggling a lot and may have a very difficult situation about whether or not to leave their children home. You can go to our website, maineauyc.org, and we are collecting information right now from childcare programs that are still open and providing emergency care. So we would be happy to connect folks and try to help if there are families looking right now and in need.
All right. And we'll put those resources on our website as well. And let me ask you this, Tara, what about grandparents caring for grandkids? We know that happens all the time, but right now it is the older population that is the most vulnerable to coronavirus.
Yeah, so I think families are making different decisions on that, and I've heard that many are not turning to grandparents specifically because of that, trying to make sure that we're keeping social distancing from those in older age groups in our state, which is why I have a feeling as we talk more about things like working from home, this is at the forefront of a lot of parents' minds, because a lot of families with children right now are just kind of figuring out how to navigate time at home with children, without childcare, without school. I'm actually right in that group. I have two children myself who are home with my husband and I while we both telework and try to help them keep up their learning and social interactions with their friends virtually.
Maybe we should keep you on for the next hour too, Tara. I'm joking. I'm not going to do that to you.
Okay.
We'll wrap up with an email here from Heather. She writes, subsidy payments are a very small portion of tuition that childcare programs take in, if they take in any subsidy at all. What can be done to support private pay tuition loss? Vermont is paying private pay tuition costs to support programs and families.
Yes. I think that's a good point. It's really a wonderful support right now at the state level that there's some emergency measures with our child care subsidy program, both for families and programs. But there are a lot of child care programs who that doesn't cover or who need additional support. And Vermont is a good example right now of they have new guidelines around being able to help really fund the private tuition fees that aren't being paid by families because they can't. And they're calling it the child care stabilization payments, because that really is what this is about. We need to make sure this child care system is stable and can exist and recover and be there for working families in Maine in the coming months and years.
And finally, Tara, before we let you go, what kind of advice do you have for the families of some 200,000 kids in Maine who are facing child care dilemmas right now? Where can they turn if they really aren't sure what's going to happen next week?
Oh, that's a big question. I would say definitely keep in touch. If your child does normally attend a child care, keep in touch with that program, that director or owner, because there are constant changes. Some are reopening. Some are going to partially be open if you are in essential services and you need help. Connect with each other. I think that's really important right now. We need to be socially distant, but we still need to find ways to connect with each other across the state and support each other over the phone, FaceTime. And if you're able to take some extra deep breaths and try to have some good time with your kids, I know we're trying to find time to just snuggle and hang out and play board games and make sure that our physical and mental and emotional health is at the forefront right now.
Well, Tara, thank you so much. Tara is the executive director of the Maine Association for the Education of Young Children, on the line with us for the whole hour. We are at the halfway point for today's program. This is a special two-hour edition of Maine Calling. We will be back to talk more about the impact of coronavirus in Maine. The second part of our show focuses on working from home, how society is adapting to this shift, and what you can do to optimize working from home. Stay with us. We'll be back after the news. Thank you.